views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Welcome back. Monday. And that weekend went fast. Where's Thanksgiving? Gone. Unreal how quickly these things go. I don't know if all of you out there agree, but it's moving at hyper speed here. And I think Don is probably looking at similar things happening. Hello, Donald. Welcome back.
Hello, Jeff. How you doing? Yeah, time does fly, as they say. I remember when I was young, my old relatives would tell me, I can't believe I'm 70, you know, and it just seems like yesterday I was 18. And, you know, as I get older, I'm beginning to understand that, boy, it's just, you just blink. And it's just unbelievable. That's why people that don't believe there's anything beyond this life, then really life is completely meaningless.
I see. That's not your credo.
No, I'm saying that the people that don't believe that there's anything beyond, then you would have to just say life is completely pointless. I mean, there has to be something beyond this.
Oh, yeah, it is a pragmatic universe when you look at it in terms of physics and astrophysics. It all adds up to some kind of divine intelligence somewhere. And
sure.
I agree.
Sure.
I've got to do a little business here. And I've held off doing this for a long time. There are two things. Part one, let me just talk briefly and quickly about David D's art. David, as most of you know, was a very close friend of mine. I brought him out here. I found him his home and got him in and set up here and there. And anyhow, we worked on most of the great pieces of art. He'd send it to me and he'd say, what's going on with this? What do you think of that? You got any ideas? And I'd send it back with my ideas. He'd send it back. Sometimes these pieces of art would go back and forth 8 to 10 times. He's the genius. I was just a sounding board. But it was really a great privilege to work with the art, much of it with David. I was with him until just a few hours before he died in a very nice hospice, convalescent home, so to speak, which are usually pretty grim, but this was okay. And he was out of it anyhow. He had turbo cancer. They gave it to him. David Dees was murdered. Let me just be blunt. David, one of the last things he said to me was, in a very raspy voice, he could hardly speak anymore, he said, "They gave it to me." I said, "I know, we've talked about this. They absolutely gave it to you." Put it on his front door knob or his car door handle, and all you got to do is touch it, goes right through your skin. The tech they have now is way far down the road than most people think. He got turbo cancer. They gave it to him and they killed him. Why? Can you imagine his art in the last 3 years, 2.5 years since this genocide began, what we'd be putting up on Rents that he would create? He was the original AI quality artist. Without AI, that's a tribute to the man's genius. Look at AI art, then look at his art. He did that on his own. Anyhow, here's the problem. When David was alive, he allowed people to use his art if they just contact him, and he put it out there. But he changed that because people were abusing his art. And so he didn't let that. He wanted people to write to him and request licensure or use and for his art. And one of the last things he said to me, he whispered to me, he left everything to me, everything. His art, his clothes, everything. He said, protect my art. And I said, David, don't worry, I will. Now, that art is copyrighted now. Copyrighted yours truly, and with David, of course, in first position ultimately, even though it's rather a cosmic position. It is all copyrighted. If some of you want to use it, just write to me. We'll work it out. The idea is to share the art. Okay. But it must be controlled. And why? Because people have been stealing the art and cutting off the DsIllustration.com watermark at the bottom or the DDs.com watermark at the bottom. They hide that. They cover it up. I've seen it many times. And then some people have actually had the incredible gall to cut up two or three different pieces of his art and reassemble them in a new piece of art, which invariably misses the point and whatever. So it's abuse and it's theft, and it's got to stop. That's one. Number two, the Rents videos, and I say this with all humility, and I mean that, are probably as good as you're going to find overall anywhere on the internet in the world, in terms of the U.S. and what's going on here. Rents video commentaries are extraordinary. The one we have up on the homepage now, I put it up there, has maybe 50,000 views now in 3 days, something like that. People love it. Unfortunately, people are cutting off the 3-second opening frame where it says the title and Rents video. They're cutting that off. And they're cutting off the outro, the closing at the end, with, you know, the big boom, and then it says a Rents video. They're cutting that off and stealing the videos, not giving credit where credit's due. And it's not all me that's doing these things. I'm very happy to present them. But damn it, there are a lot of thieves out there, and they can play dumb. Oh, I didn't know. I did. Bullshit. Everybody knows where these videos are coming from. So, hey, gang, let's not cut off the opening and the close of the videos. It's a total of 5 seconds max. So let's give credit where credit's due. And again, I have a brilliant associate who's making these things happen. And this guy is incredible. So that's all I wanted to say. But let's stop the bullshit and the theft, okay? Theft is theft. Let's just be kind about life while we're still here. Thank you, Don, for the time.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, certainly we can all agree with that. You know, the whether it's artwork or writers or entertainers or whatever.
Now,
you know,
it's like them stealing a part of your book and keeping your name out of it. It's the same thing.
And it's you know, artists are just have always been underpaid, and you know, literal artists. Like, I didn't know Mr. D's, but people like that, you know, in the old days when you had actual art, when you had paint exhibitions of real art, and not the modern crap that was we know now was financed by the CIA for a long time. They pushed it. But when you had real art and real artists, you used to have patrons, and you used to have wealthy people, usually like some wealthy woman would see a struggling young artist and back them. I don't know if that happens anymore, but that's, you know, they very few people in the arts make money. And in On Borrowed Fame, my book, I showed how, you know, so many actors and entertainers, so many musicians really didn't make very much money. As a writer, you know, my ninth book was just published. And I can tell you, the royalty rates are just so small. It's unbelievable. And it's just, and there's, you know, there's something wrong with that. I even before I became a published author, I think it's wrong. I think, you know, for musicians, I mean, why do they get, why were they, even the Beatles and the Rolling Stones were getting like 2 cents a record? Why? I mean, why did
Hollywood agents take a very big percentage? I think book publishing companies take an even bigger percent. You get like a dime out of a dollar on this.
Yeah,
it's a joke.
It's generally 10% about is the starting rate, and that's something's wrong with that. You know, when the creator of a product. Right. Why are you only getting 10%? Where is the rest of that going? It seems to me like the rest of the people, the publisher, the platforms and so forth, all that, the printer, all that, to me, they should be divvying up the 10%. I think the artist should probably would be more appropriate if the artist got 90%. I don't understand why it works that way, but it's always been that way.
It should not be the majority for the publisher under any circumstance. I completely agree. Even
but
if it's
it
51-49, the creator deserves the majority of the income, period.
Yep. And that's, you know, that's the reason why, you know, when you go back to Marxism, he wasn't necessarily talking about that, but that's the kind of truth. When you look at the exploitation of people, you look at something like Eugene Debs talked about, the great socialist. He was a socialist, but he was a great man. And he was jailed in World War I for opposing the war. And he had a great quote when he went to court. And he said that, you know, I'm opposing a system that allows one man to accumulate more wealth than, you know, hundreds of working men do in an entire lifetime. There's something wrong with that, Jeff. And that's why Survival of the Richest is still a book where that I wrote, that wrote, my heart is really in that book, because I mean, you can do the math. I mean, if the average salary is $50,000 a year, whatever it is for an American, in some cases, you know, you look at like a CEO that gets a $40 million umbrella. Do the math. I mean, you're talking in some cases of regular workers would have to work centuries to make what somebody gets in one bonus.
It's true.
And that's
it's
something
true.
You don't have to be a communist to understand how wrong that is. Nobody's life is worth that much more. And as I put on Social Survival of the Richest, as I said, you know, you could argue that if one person, you know, we know cancer is an industry, and we know that they created it, and they can certainly do, you know, whatever they want. They can do something about it if they wanted to, but and they clearly they don't. But let's assume that it's like they say it is, you know, it's a mysterious ailment and they're constantly searching for a cure. Well, let's just say one individual developed the cure and eradicated cancer. Well, if one person was proven to have done that, boy, that person is worth millions and millions of what any other human being is, because their impact on life and on everyone else. So you could argue, okay, that guy can be a trillionaire. I don't really mind. He deserves it. Or someone even more so, if one individual came up with some kind of drug that, you know, really extended life for human beings, you know, doubled, tripled it or something. Well, you can't put a price tag on that. So you would have to say, yeah, that guy, I'm not going to quibble. Whatever he gets, he deserves. So that's the kind of thing. But when I did it, Survival of the Richest, when I looked at most of these, almost all of them, of the wealthiest people in the world, exactly what did they do? Most of them are really great at accumulating wealth. Most of them are great at investing.
Trust fund babies.
Most of them were, as Gerald Celente says, were born on third base, thought they hit a home run. Mm-hmm. So they started out with a good hand in life, and they were able to make themselves richer. But they didn't contribute anything to mankind. I don't know, Warren Buffett, what is he, an asset man? What is Carl Slim? I don't know. Bill Gates was his father was president of Planned Parenthood. His grandfather was a bank president. His mother was sitting on boards of directors in the 1950s when women were the most wives at home baking
silver
cookies.
Spoon in his mouth.
Right, exactly. Right.
Or somewhere else. Yeah.
He basically stole an operating system from Apple, who had stolen it from IBM.
That's the word.
Yeah. So, I mean, and so what did he do? He created a monopoly. He destroyed freeware. I mean, you know, he got to the point where Apple was the one that, provided all the free computers to school systems, because Gates wanted to charge for everything. He didn't even want to give computers to schools for a long time. So, you know, this guy is, what did he contribute to mankind? I mean, not to mention the fact that he's, you know, one of the world's biggest eugenicists. So even if he wasn't that, so what are these guys worth? You know, so I think if you look at it, that way, that's why I can never be a conservative because of that. I get in arguments all the time with people and say, oh, you know, that's class envy. Class envy, class warfare. And I said, the 1% has been declaring war on the rest of us, you know, since the beginning of time, basically. I mean, that's why I subtitled Survival of the Rich, you know, the greatest conspiracy of all. And that is the war, basically, of the rich against the rest of us. And, you know, I think I mentioned this on the program once before, but when I was doing the update, the paperback version of Survival of the Rich, that Naomi Wolf wrote the foreword to, when I did research, I came upon this most amazing statistic, and that is that if you divided up all the money in America, all the known money. Now, of course, there's so much we don't know. The Fed has never really been audited. We don't know what's in there.
A whole secret economy that runs way overhead.
Right. We don't even know. We don't know what's in this. All those tax-free foundations, the Gates Foundation, the Clinton Foundation. Of course, the older ones like the Rockefeller Foundation, the Ford Foundation, Carnegie Foundation for International Peace. All these tax shelters have been around forever. We don't know how much money's in there. Because there are shelters, and we don't know how much money is offshore that, again, is there and not being taxed. But the money that we do know is there. If you divided it all up between every man, woman, and child in America, every man, woman, and child would get $344,000 each of the known wealth. I think that's one of the most incredible financial statistic I've ever heard. Now, I'm not suggesting we do that, but,
right.
You know, just that shows you how much wealth is there, and that's why, you know, it's unbelievable that you can have somebody getting these bonuses at the end of the year, and they're called performance bonuses for a reason. They're obviously not for performance, but in the 1990s when they created them, so that if they were performance based, so-called performance based, they're tax free, so they don't pay any taxes on them. Do you hear Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren any complaining about the performance bonuses that are tax free? Of course not, because those people, they don't want to pay any taxes. They never have, and they never will. That's why I began Survival the Richest with a great quote from Ambrose Bierce. You know, still one of my all time favorite writers, and his definition of poor was unable to pay taxes. For instance, Vanderbilt. And I think that's just, you know, that's just such a, what was a brilliant way to begin the book, and a brilliant way to describe the situation. But at any rate, that's why I still have, and why Huey Long remains my hero, because Huey was the last one who recognized what the problem is. You don't see anybody out there saying that. The right, like I said, they argue with me all the time. Oh, you're just... You know, you're just envious of anybody. You know, what's your definition of rich? Anybody that has more than you? And I like I told, I've never known anybody that under any kind of a tax redistribution plan would not benefit from it. I always try to tell people, do you actually think someone's going to take what you have? What do you have anyhow? Do you really think you have like, you know, 100, 200 million spare or something? What do you think you have? But these people are deranged, and they think somebody's going to come after what they have and going to give it to somebody on food stamps. It's not the way it works. You're going to go after the – and that's why Huey Long's plan, the Share the Wealth plan, would have exempted the first $1 million of income. And this is the 1930s. That would be like $12 million today from any tax, any income tax at all. So you know who he was going after. He was going at the absolute top of the 1%, and that's what we need to do, and that's why he was so dangerous and why they killed him, because he's the only one that ever did that. Every other, you know, so-called Bernie Sanders type that talks about it, they talk about raising taxes on the wealthy, but they don't talk about the offshore profits. They don't talk about the tax-free foundations. They're going after the people that are doing a little bit better, and, you know, maybe making $200,000 or something, but they're not going after the big boys. So anyhow, that's my socialistic rant.
No, it's fine. I get it. I certainly get it. All right, here we have the Ukraine war. The U.S.-Ukraine war against Russia going on, and we also have the U.S.-Israeli war against the Palestinians in Gaza going on, being underwritten financially by the American taxpayer. Have you been asked if your money can go to pay for bombs to slaughter more children, I think 7,000 almost children in Palestine, in Gaza, have been destroyed now by American weapons, flown and delivered by American jets. This is sick. It's our war. We're 50% involved at least. Same thing with Ukraine. And we have been able to feed Zelensky enough money to perpetrate his psychopathic insanity to the extent that now there are 43, 45-year-old is the average age in the Ukrainian military, that being the cannon fodder they're throwing in human wave assaults against Russia's mighty army with full air superiority and full artillery superiority. Never mind the West is giving Ukraine all the tech that we can or dare. It's not changing anything. So the Russians were in a trench warfare clean out last week. They went through trenches and killed a lot of soldiers in there. And when they got in there and started walking through, he says, there were women all over the place. They had been destroying women. So there's Zelensky. Zelensky is personally responsible for the deaths of over 1 million Ukrainian Christian men and some women in the military since the special military operation began, which is getting close to 2 years. This guy is nuts. He's. I cannot believe that the Russians didn't take him out. But I understand why. Putin has a soft spot for the Jewish people. Zelensky is a Zionist Jew, as are all of his top people. So it's a Jewish enclave. 10 million Ukrainians have left. They don't want to come back. They're in Europe now and all over the place. Some are over here. But this is not going to end well. Seriously, here's why Zelensky is still alive. I've said this before, I'll say it again. When Putin was a little kid in elementary school, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, he'd get home and his parents would be gone to work. The neighbor family would take him in every day, feed him a snack or late lunch, whatever, help him with his homework and all that. It was a Jewish family, very kind and wonderful people. So he has a soft spot for them, as well he should. The other part of the coin there is that the oligarchs, almost invariably Jewish in Russia and Ukraine, are really running much of the show. Zelensky could have been removed 10,000 times by now with one hypersonic missile, one bomb, whatever. He's still there. There's a reason he's still there, and I've just assayed it to a significant degree for you. That's all true. All right, hold on. We'll come right back with Donald in just a few minutes. Lots ahead. Okay, and welcome back. Oh, I just found out. The video on why have the Jewish people been expelled 1,030 times from nations, countries, nation states, and cultures in the last 2,000 or so years. Why have they been expelled over 1,000 times? Well, that video now has racked up 91,000 views in 3 days. So these are questions that are being given real good answers in that video. There's no anti-Semitism anywhere here. These are facts. Just facts. So let's spread the video around and leave the front and the back acknowledgement of the group that put these videos together. They're all excellent. I hope you'll look at many more of them. They're up on the right-hand side at the top on the homepage. Rents, videos, commentaries. You'll see them. All right. Onward. Where do you want to go?
I don't know. Well, I mean, how was your Thanksgiving? Did you have a nice Thanksgiving? Hello?
What? A nice Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
What? I spent it as usual alone. I'm a solo Thanksgiving type, and I got some frozen... what the hell was it? Frozen raviolis with organic, with spinach and something else in them. Spinach and mozzarella or something organic. It's all organic, though. Anyhow, I put those in a pot and put some spaghetti sauce on it, and happy Thanksgiving. Every day is a Thanksgiving. Every day is a blessing.
I hear from, because I write about these things, and I hear from so many people, and so many people that contact me told me they were spending Thanksgiving alone too. So again, I think it goes into
nothing. I'm not feeling sorry for myself at all.
And most of the people that contact me are happy to spend it alone too. I still think that says something about our society that people are happy to be alone. What does that say about other people?
You betcha.
However you look at it, I think it is sad either way. Really, it's sad indictment of society or however you want to look at it.
Don, hold on. This is important, what you just said. And I think all of you understand that there are enormously powerful forces at work that are literally reshaping our culture, what's left of it, and have controlled the descent into mass mental incompetence. And now in Oregon, not only did they give up, they dismissed any culpability for any student to have to become proficient in mathematics, reading or writing. They don't have to have any skills at all, and they'll still get their diploma. And now, I can't remember which state, New Jersey. The New Jersey Teachers Union has now passed, I guess by unanimous vote, a new policy that no teachers hired as teachers and brought into the union have to demonstrate any competence in reading, writing, or arithmetic so as not to discriminate against the DEI group. Seriously, they don't have to have any competence. This is the end of America. This will create, in no time at all, fourth world circumstances.
Yes. We were.
Oh, yeah. No, this is over. They're taking it down.
No, because the third world has an excuse. The third world is usually the victim of
not financially impoverished. Yeah, some dictators rob them blind.
Right,
Right.
So, but we're mirroring what we see in the third world. What I talked about earlier with the consolidation of wealth, it's just more people have wealth in America, but we're still run on what I call that 80-20 split, the same split the casinos use. That's why I've called what we have a casino economy. 80% must lose to varying degrees for 20% to win in varying degrees. And I think that's what you see. You see that 80-20% split everywhere. And in real third world countries, it's probably more like 95-5 or something. But we may be getting there. I mean, we may be getting to that point, but it's an indictment of so many other things. And the reason I brought up Thanksgiving and being alone and everything is that if people go to Substack, my Substack was the only place I'm not shadow banned. It's the only place I'm growing. DonaldJeffries.substack.com. It's called I Protest, just like my live streaming weekly show. You'll see I have pinned at the top of the page something called the American Loneliness Phenomenon that I wrote. I think it's one of the best things I ever wrote. And it's it describes what I think, since I wrote it, I think it's only been exacerbated. America, the dysfunction we see in society, I don't know if it's that way anywhere else in the world, but it's certainly outside of, again, the American problems are Western problems. So you see it basically white countries. So you see immigration, all these things, the culture collapsing. This is all in white countries. It's not happening in Asian countries. It's not happening in non-white countries. There's certainly no Muslim countries. But it's happening here because that was by design for that to happen. So people, if you go to my Substack, read that pinned article, because it talks about, and these are just people I've known in my family. And certainly since I started hearing from people that respond to my work, it's unbelievable the stories they tell me. That they may have kids they never see, or grandchildren they never see, or they don't get along with their parents, they don't get along with their siblings. Every family, I haven't met one person, when you scratch the surface a little bit, that has a family that isn't dysfunctional. And I just don't believe it's that way. For instance, in Japan, maybe it is, but or Korea, I don't think it is. And I think it's an indictment of Western society. And again, it kind of brings up what you talk about with the media, because so much of this, I think, is learned. If you go back and especially since television, if you go back 50, 60 years and look at some of the messages coming out on television and in the mainstream media, this kind of stuff was pushed. The nuclear family was discouraged. Divorce was celebrated. Single moms were celebrated. You had a mixed family celebrated. And, you know, in terms of like, you know, one like Brady Bunch type of thing. And, you know, these were what was encouraged. You did not see, you know, any kind of a nuclear family. And when you did have it, it was a really incredibly dysfunctional thing, like Married with Children or Roseanne, something like that, where the parents were a mess. The father was weak and the mother is bossy and the kids hate, you know, don't respect, especially the father. And I think that's been reflective. And in the feuds you see in the media between the family, it's spilled over to real life. Life imitates art. And so I'm grateful that people contact me with their stories, but it's very sad reading them. Because, I mean, you know, I complain about, you know, my family, my extended family canceling me, you know, to one degree or another because of what I write, especially they don't approve of the fact I'm unvaccinated. And I'm the only one, you know, my kids and I. But it's nothing like what I hear. I mean, you know, they haven't shut me off to where I'll never talk to them again or something. So anyway, that's why I brought up that. Because I was, you know, I'm fortunate. I think Thanksgiving, it should be. Well, you're right. We should give thanks every day. But it's nice. It's like Christmas. You know, people talk about the holidays at Christmas. This season brings out the best in people. Whatever's left that's good in people, it comes out around the holiday season. So whatever generosity they have, it comes out then. And something, Thanksgiving was the time it used to be where all the dysfunction that was already there. So you had, you know, people scattered across the country, families that hardly saw each other. But you know, how many movies and TV shows would you see celebrating? Well, they came home for Thanksgiving. Usually they argued and all that, but they didn't. And it looks like now they don't even do that. So I think it's, you know, it's an indictment of our society. And, I think family, you know, it's important, and I think it should be promoted more. But as you know, Jeff, with the especially with it, what I talk about mostly applies to whites, Western gentlemen. That's it, because we are, that's why people can't figure me out. I'm talking, you know, and the first half hour I was saying things that a socialist would say, because I do have a lot of leftist, classical leftist stuff still from Huey Long and when I was with the ACLU, when I was a card-carrying member there. But on the other hand, I recognize that what is the Great Replacement? The Great Replacement exists. And everything we're talking about, yes. Jeff, this is aimed at replacing. This is all directed at white people. And as a white person, I mean, I would object to it, I think. I hope I would object to it if they were trying to replace anybody. But the fact that they're clearly trying to do this, I mean, when you see... I mean, sometimes I go on YouTube and watch some of these videos and just see these, and they're almost always white people and almost always white women. And you see these, I saw this deluded, I mean, terrifying. I mean, I can't imagine being young today and trying to date these girls. I mean, it's really scary. I mean, they look, wouldn't turn my back.
They're being steered into a masculine form of the feminine. They're beginning to turn their back on reproduction. Men are now becoming obviously estrogenized and becoming not that they're not alpha males anymore. There's a war on alpha. Alpha system in this culture, the alpha system is being torn apart. It's really not okay.
No, so and that
it's bad. Okay. And this goes along with James Calhoun's mouse experiment. It's a fascinating thing. They got their whole blueprint from this guy named Calhoun. I'll find the name here in a minute. I always forget the name of it. Mouse Utopia or something. It's an experiment. And he repeated it over 25 times and got the same results every single time. And it's exactly where they're going with these 15-minute cities. We're mice. Wait and see. Yeah. I'll find the name here.
No, the family is a threat to them because... again, if you have loyalty to your family over the state, then that's something they don't want. And that's why they're pushing more and more. If you look at 1984, Brave New World, but in both of those books, the family had been eradicated. Close relationships had been eradicated. And they don't want people having close allegiances. That's why they would discourage something like marriage. And so I think it's very important, you know, to try to keep this. And you talk about alpha males, and alpha white males in particular are, you know, not much in demand now. They're very short supply. But I still think that that was one of the main attractions to Donald Trump. Regardless of how bluster he is and how ridiculous he is, he comes across as an alpha male. And they hate that. And I think that was, regardless of even what he was saying to begin with, he's coming across as an alpha male. He's dismissive of women. He doesn't automatically, you know, concede that whatever a woman is saying is right. He doesn't apologize. And again, so I will give him that. Again, I think he's an actor. He's playing a role. But that part of his personality attracted a lot of us. So he said, yeah, right on. I've talked before about how I don't understand why all these people that get themselves in trouble, why they always apologize for, I mean, they get themselves in trouble basically for thought crimes when they say something that offends blacks or Jews or gays or transgenders. And really, that's what you get in trouble for. You're not going to get in trouble. You're not going to be fired for saying something controversial about Eskimos or something. It's always the same group. So we know who the favorite groups are. But no one, every time that happens, no one ever stands their ground and says, you know, what do you mean? I said what I said. You know, that's what I believe. I have the right to do that. On the Constitution, there's a thing called the Bill of Rights, the free speech, First Amendment. No one ever does that. Instead, they stumble all over themselves. They apologize and they still get fired. Their lives are still ruined. They're still canceled.
Oh, no. I know.
I mean, don't they ever look at history and say, well, okay, this, even if they're being insincere, you know, this strategy doesn't work. Let me try something else. But because again, if you, I would never, you know, it almost goes back, Jeff, to like when you're a little kid, when, you know, you say, you take that back. Or cry ugly. Yeah. I mean, it's at that level.
Yeah,
it's at that level. It really is.
It is.
Yeah, because I mean, you said what you said because that's what you think. Okay, I may not like what you think, and if I don't like it strongly enough, I won't want to associate with you anymore. But I'm not going to sit there and say, well, you don't have the right to say that. I can't get inside your mind and say, how dare you think that. You know, I mean, I if people say they don't like what I'm writing or something, I'm not going to argue with them and say, okay, well, you know, okay, right. I'm writing controversial stuff. Of course, people are going to be, you know, it's there are going to be people that oppose it. I put myself out there, but you can't. And this is what the woke crowd is trying to do. They're trying to get inside people's heads and say, and you know, how far away are we from something where literally where your thoughts can be read? And that's a terrifying prospect, and everybody ought to be scared of that.
I think they're actually able to do that to what they've allowed to leak out is that they're able to do that to a substantial degree now already. What are they really able to do? Probably far beyond what they leaked. Probably.
Yeah, and that's just, you know, it goes over into, it gets into media again, Minority Report and things like that where you... And they're already doing that. I wrote an article for American Free Press probably last year about a police department, I think, in Alabama. And again, it applies mostly, almost all to all black areas. So again, people don't pay attention. But hey, you know, they're coming for you. And it was this thing where they were going to apprehend people who they suspected of being capable of committing crimes. And think about that. That's Minority Report. They're arresting people before they commit crimes. And again, the precedence has been set.
That's extremely dangerous. It's totally unconstitutional. It's inhuman. Come on.
Yeah.
Please. This is crazy. This is bad Orwell.
It is.
Not even clever Orwell.
Well, just look what we have now. You have this guy, Doug Mackey. And Tucker Carlson, I realize how much I miss Tucker Carlson sometimes I'll check him out on Twitter or something. And, you know, people can say, whatever, maybe he's a disinfo agent. I don't know. But he seems to be right about almost everything. Maybe that's the part he's playing. I don't know. But he had this guy, Doug Mackey, on. Nobody else has had him on. This is just a young guy who shared a meme back in 2016, making fun of Hillary Clinton, basically trying to say, you know, trying to trick her voter people into vote texting or a number or something. And they showed that there was an Asian woman that did the exact same thing at the exact same time, trying to trick Trump voters the exact same way. Nothing happened to her. This guy was prosecuted after Biden entered office 5 years later, 10 days after he entered office in 2021, 5 years after this guy's alleged crime of sharing a meme, he was prosecuted. He faces up to 10. And of course, he was convicted by a jury that has the same right to vote as you and I do. Some jury convicted. I mean, you imagine how dangerous. That's what's really dangerous, is when you get juries convicting people. These people can vote, and they're supposed to be your peers, and they're okay with sending someone to prison for 10 days, let alone 10 years, for putting out a political meme that makes fun of Hillary Clinton. That's a terrifying precedent.
I don't even recognize this country when I hear things like that. I just don't. No. Nope.
Yeah, and that's where, so nothing surprised me. Now, when you have, and that's why people, I get it from both sides with Donald Trump, because when I talk about him, his prosecutions, again, I say he's Trumpenstein. I think it's a Trumpenstein project. I think he was an actor hired for the role. But regardless, symbolically, him being prosecuted for these ridiculous things. I mean, as a licensed realtor, I've been a realtor since 1985, and I just do it on the side now. But the idea that you could be prosecuted for exaggerating the value of his property.
Mm-hmm.
What? Mm-hmm. I've never met a homeowner in my life that didn't exaggerate the value of the property.
There, of course.
I mean, how is that a crime? And he'll be convicted. And people that hate him, that have Trump derangement syndrome, which of course that's the Trumpenstein project. It was designed to elicit those kind of reactions, that kind of vitriolic hate. And they're happy. They want him hung in the public square, and they don't care what it's for. So they're happy to have him prosecuted for that. And the fact that he's going to be convicted of complaining about the vote in Georgia, the same state where Stacey Abrams is running around still complaining about it, and nobody senses the irony there. What does that say? That opens the door to any of us in the future saying anything about vote fraud. The precedent has been set. Well, we convicted a former president of the United States. Same thing with the rape. The more of these rape allegations, they're going to find something, anything they can get on us if they need to. This woman didn't remember the year the alleged rape happened in a cloakroom at an upscale department store or something. And then she joked about it on social media like a decade later or something. He was convicted of this. I mean, how could any jury convict somebody of rape when the person couldn't even remember the year it happened? I mean, this is where we're at. So that opens the door. Same thing. An actor recently was convicted of rape, sentenced to 30 years. And the rape happened 20 years plus years ago. He's on some kind of TV show. And again, it was a he said, she said thing. They're opening the door. They're using whether these people are really convicted of anything or it's just a show. Symbolically, it's happening. And it opens the door so they can use that for any of us against political dissidents, and they can say, hey, this is a precedent. Well, we have the case here. And of course, Donald Trump was convicted of this. So they may end up, convicting, they may prosecute Trump for, promulgating conspiracy theories.
Four or five different cases, and he's going to run into, obviously, a judge who will be a communist socialist, at least sympathizer, right. And they're going to convict him on some of these counts. It'll have to go to the Supreme Court, so this will be locked up in the jurisprudence system for potentially a couple of years unless they agree to move it to the front of the line. I don't know. This is all, it's an obscenity, all of it. It really is.
It is. Yeah. All this stuff is going on now. That's why, as a civil libertarian, I'm one of the last civil libertarians in the country, I guess, but there used to be a lot more of us. But the fact the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, regardless what people thought about them, that they're communist inspired or whatever, they defended real Nazis. They defended real KKK members. They defended people that were, far right wing. They believed in, or they said they believed in free speech. And now they just basically say, that's not that important anymore. Now we're concerned with climate change and racism and all the nonsense that the woke left is. So there is no organization now out there that's going to fall. Otherwise, the ACLU existed as it did back in like the 1970s. You would see them picketing for the January 6th prisoners, even though they might disagree with them, because that's the only thing that happened. That is allowed to happen. Again, the precedent has been set because you didn't have, you know, hundreds of thousands of people marching on D.C. prison and saying, you know, this is ridiculous. Due process. We demand due process for these people. This is what they're doing to the January 6th prisoners is illegal, unconstitutional. But it goes back to Abraham Lincoln and the precedents he set. And that's the problem. We let these precedents be set. And in many cases, we make heroes of these people like Lincoln. And then when the next time comes along, they'll just say, well, you know, Abraham Lincoln did this. And if anybody did complain about the January 6th prisoners, that's who they would cite. They would say, well, you know, Lincoln did it during his insurrection. He had to do that. So, you know, we had to do it as well. So that's the situation we find ourselves in, because Americans allowed these things to happen so many times without doing anything. And now, you know, now we're backed into a corner, and we're in danger of losing absolutely everyone of our rights, and they're dangling by a thread. We have very few precious rights left, and once they get rid of platforms like this, when we don't have these platforms anymore, it's over. They're coming for it. They can't stand the fact
that it's just a matter of time. If I might again recommend, thanks to our AJ, our good listener, not the other one, different one. The mouse experiment run by Mr. Calhoun is a landmark, and I'm without any hesitation going to say that this has been used extensively in the globalist elite and their plans on how to run us into these 15-minute type cities. The lookup is called Universe 25, Calhoun, Calhoun, and look what this man did. Read the results. There's actually a video up there. It's about 6 or 7 minutes long. Explains the whole thing. It's remarkable. And that's what will happen to us. You watch. You need to look this up, Don. This is important.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Universe 25. Yeah. It's a biggie. All right. Thank you. Great to talk with you again, as always. Man, keep your seatbelts fastened tightly. Things are not going to get any easier.
Okay.
Take care. Good night, Don.
Take care.
Universe 25, everyone. You want to take a look at that for sure. Back with more in just a few minutes.